manufacturer off of Lincoln Street. I'm here really to try to figure out what the future life for us as a company and what direction Springfield is going to be going, if it makes sense to continue to develop and build manufacturing bases here or not.
Donald Berg, site executive over at Symantec. We're not doing that. I'm managing anthrax scares.
Glad to see you here tonight.
The first late evening this week. But here just obviously represents Symantec and help them, you know, provide input and everything.
Anything to get from this?
Is it good? You know, publicity is good publicity.
I think a virus can come to
Is it virtual?
Yes.
Guy Weiss, Vice President of the Emerald Arts Center next door, residential realtor, photographer, and all these other things.
I'm Naomi Campolo. I'm a Springfield High School student, and I aspire to be an architect, so.
Welcome, Naomi.
Johnny Gershman, Planning Commissioner.
I'm Carrie Westland. I am the CEO of the Convention and Visitors Association for Lane County.
And Egan, Springfield Chamber.
Doug McKay, McKay Commercial Properties. And we've been property owners in Springfield since the mid-50s, primarily on the Mohawk Boulevard on both sides north of Centennial.
I'm George Greer. I'm the treasurer of Lane County Farm Bureau. Farm Bureau is pleased to be a part of this because we were concerned about continuing erosion of the agricultural base in Oregon, which is one of Oregon's most important industries.
I'm Brianna Huber. I'm a junior at Thurston High School. I also aspire to be an architect.
Welcome to that.
Stephen Yet. I manage a little bit of property in the Springfield area. Coasting to sitting here by day.
Glad to have you on board, Stephen.
Dave Mora. I'm a commercial real estate broker. I have my own business. Been a director on the Springfield Board of Realtors for 8 years or better. I can't remember. It's been a long time. Anyway, so keep my hand in and make sure Springfield grows.
Bob Parker with Echo Northwest. We are the city's consultants on this project.
And I'm Beth Goodman with Echo Northwest also. And evidently, we don't need name tags working.
That's right. They'll get to know you well.
Next time, we should have name tags for you, though. There's a lot of names here. Some folks that couldn't make it here tonight, and their tags are here. Hopefully, they'll join us. David, for those who are new, there's a handful at least. Could you do a one-minute summary of sort of, maybe it'd be longer than 1 minute, but can you kind of give a very general overview, like you did last time, and condense it into a couple of minutes about the task of the stakeholder group, how long we expect to be meeting, and that kind of thing for the folks who are joining us?
Sure. As Dan mentioned last time, I just briefly went over kind of some guidelines of the committee and exactly how we will operate and what our purpose is. And generally speaking, the stakeholder committee is set up, as you can tell from the conversation or names that just went around the room, that there's a wide breadth of different representatives here. So we got we try to be diverse in our selection, and we have representations from developers and as well as farm interests and watershed interests and businesses as well. So the guidelines or the goal of this stakeholder group is to be advisory to the Planning Commission and to the City Council. Each person on this committee has a vote. As we go through, we'll be talking about different issues related to the urban growth boundary and As we move forward, there'll be different recommendations that are forwarded to, like I said, the Planning Commission and the City Council, and we'll be voting on those. And in a lot of instances, not all of us are going to agree on every issue. There'll be there may be split votes, there may be some that are way more one way or another, but we also want to include the minority voice as well. So in other words, if half, say, or say three quarters of the people vote one way, we still want to make sure that the decision makers, the Planning Commission, City Council, make sure that they hear all the voices. And so that'll include any dissenting opinions or whatnot. So that'll be included. I'll try to reflect this in the minutes each time as we go through. We're also recording each of these meetings, just so you know. And we're working on posting these on our city website as well. So they'll be available for any of you, including if you're unable to make a meeting, you can certainly access that to listen to the recording so that you're up to speed.
Okay. Thanks, David. Lee Beyer has joined us. He's co-chairing the committee, and Lee, there's several new folks that had a break when we talk about including a couple of folks from our high school staff for being here that joined the committee. But at this time, to kind of move us along and stay on track, we have minutes, and from my packet, they look like this. If you have them, if you could refer to them to a second, for a second, I would need a motion and a second to approve.
So moved.
Second. Okay, Lee, and there was a second or two. Any discussion about the minutes? We will adopt the minutes each time, so if you find a correction, you were there and your name's not listed here, those are kind of glaring things, but I think as we get into the meat of the subject here, we will have some need to go over the minutes carefully so we captured everything. So, not hear any other discussion, all in favor of adopting the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Oh, I'm sorry.
They came out by email.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. We'll try to rectify
it. I
you
look at the judgment.
All right. Okay, the minutes are approved. Thank you. And as we pick down here, I don't see any requests for public testimony, so I'm going to just ask if there is any. Okay, I like to hear that. We have a large segment of the economic trends, and for those who were here at the first meeting, one of the very important things is to set a baseline of how the buildable lands inventory issue going out into the future affects the economy, what the current economy of Springfield is. I think a lot of you had questions about what will it be out into the future. And tonight we're going to get a start on that. And this is going to be Eco Northwest pretty much talking at us. I would ask that you follow through. Did you receive any of the email documents, Guy? David, I wonder if you can supply this because it'd be pretty boring if you don't have that, because there's a couple of economic reports. If you could jot questions down or concerns, or if there's something you need some clarification on, please jot those down. I kind of like to have the presentation made, and then we may take a little bit of a break and then come back for a much more of a give and take, input, question and answer discussion. But to try to get through this in 45 minutes so that we can have that discussion, I'd kind of like if we could to kind of jot down anything that occurs to you. So with that, and finding yourselves reports, should have looked like this in your packets. Make it a lot easier if you have that in front of you while we get the sort of oral report here. So
the slideshow.
Yeah, a slideshow. So let's go into our economic.
Do you
don't have that?
Yep. You're looking at it.
This guy here?
Yep. He's just put it in there in colors.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet.
Thanks. Okay.
No. We'll see if I can work this in.
Down arrows.
Okay. I got it. So I'm going to start at the beginning here and remind you what it is that we're trying to accomplish. This project is about determining how much land the city needs to accommodate growth over a 20-year period.
And embedded in that evaluation are a number of policy decisions that get made, including the potential for expanding the city's urban growth boundary, the line that defines the extent of where urban development can occur. There's three main parts to the project, just a review from last time. There's a housing needs study that's going on, or what the city calls residential land needs study. That's a project that's on a different track. We've got a different committee working on that, but we'll merge here as we get a little bit further into this project. The second part is the economic analysis, or what the state calls it, economic opportunities analysis. Essentially what the idea is here is to determine the community's economic development potential, to develop a strategy or a vision for economic development in your community, and then to adopt policies to implement that vision. And those policies could range from a number of different approaches to finding large sites to attract industry, to redeveloping your downtown, for example. Another part of this is to do an inventory of land within the city's current urban growth boundary to be able to tell how much land is developed, how much is buildable, and how much could be redevelopable over this planning period. So those are the three components, and what we essentially do, you can think about it as a supply and a demand. So the supply is the supply of land that's available for development. The demand part is how much growth you're accommodating, and growth generally falls into two flavors, residential growth or employment growth, with some public uses mixed in there. So Willamette Lane, for example, has a parks master plan that defines community's vision for parks, and those are real land needs that need to get accommodated over this planning period. So tonight what we're going to do is we're going to dig in and begin to talk about some of the economic trends and the implications, and we're going to ask a series of questions of the committee. We've made some refinements to the agenda, so I hope you'll be willing to play along with us. One of the things that is Beth and I began to talk about where we could get this evening with the information that we provided you at this point, we, I think, got clear that it was going to be difficult to develop scenarios or what those scenarios would actually be at this point. I think that conversation probably comes a little bit later. But we do have a number of assumptions we made about what we think the city wants to do based on our review of documents and our understanding of Springfield. We'd like to get your input on those assumptions. Are they the right assumptions? Did we miss something? And we have a number of questions that we'd like to ask you to give us some input on, with the notion that what we're building towards is information that we will present at council work sessions in June, and hopefully by the end of June we'll have sufficient direction from council about what they want the community economic development strategy to be over this planning period. So we're going to talk about economic trends and survey results. Just as a reminder, if you don't know, the city's been conducting an online survey for about the past 4 or 5 weeks. Last I heard, there were over 200 responses to it, and Beth's going to share a little bit of that information with you this evening. And then we'll get into the discussion. David left, so I can't tease him about this, but I want to give you some context for how this works. And for some of you like Dan, this is, I don't even know if it's a review. You could probably come up here and do this better than I can. But I think it's important to have a foundation for how local economies work, so that you have the context for how land use planning fits into the economic element of this. And in some senses, you can think of economic activity as a vat or a pool, and you have inputs and outputs. And so on this side, the inputs into this end up being non-local purchase of raw materials, consumer goods, services, manufactured goods. The outputs end up being non-local sales of manufactured goods and services, raw material. And then you have your local resource pool. So things are happening in our local economy, production and consumption of goods and services. And our resource pool ends up being land, water, air, minerals, management, technology, and capital. So those are the things that make the economy run. And then out here you have what economists frequently call leakage, loss of resources, employed workers, spoilage of natural resources, or even retail sales going into other markets. So this is kind of a traditional model of how local economies work, and one of the things that we're going to underscore throughout this evening's discussion is that Springfield doesn't exist in a vacuum. There's no way to tease apart your economy from the economy of Eugene and Springfield or the Southern Willamette Valley. That makes kind of thinking about local economic development a little bit challenging, but I don't think it precludes the city from adopting a vision and moving forward with that vision. But it does create both opportunities in terms of access to labor and resources, but it also creates competition with other communities that may or may not have similar objectives in mind. A little bit about economic base theory, and I think this is important to understand, and I think it is foundational to an understanding of how communities have gone about doing economic development and economic development planning. And what tends to happen is that you, or economists, break economic activities into basic and non-basic activities. And a basic activity is stated up here, produce goods or services which are exported outside of the local economy. So the traditional model of that would be a lumber mill, for example. You've got a resource pool that you're adding value to, and the majority of that product is consumed outside of our community. The dollars flow in. Brings money into the economy from external sources, and sometimes they're called city-forming economic activities. The model of basic economic activities, historically, it's, I think, been thought of as manufacturing, but I think that that's changed quite a bit. And so we can say that, for example, Symantec is a basic industry for the city of Springfield or this region, or the Royal Caribbean is a basic industry. I would contend that the university is a basic industry for this region because so many of the people that attend the university come from outside and they bring money into our community. Non-basic activities, activities that produce goods or services for local consumption. So your basic retail and services, your grocery stores, your healthcare services, et cetera, they help recirculate money within the local economy, and they're sometimes called city-serving activities. So this is going to be the majority of employment in our local market, as Beth is going to explain in a little bit. And then you have multiplier effects. And so coming back to the basic economic activities, the traditional model of economic development has been recruitment and the desire to recruit these basic industries to your community so that they are bringing dollars in and then creating a larger pool of economic activity. There's other models that are being explored, and recruitment is one strategy of many that communities are using at this point in time to try and sustain their economic base. So two kinds of multipliers, and economic multiplier, increase in basic economic activities brings basic jobs. It may also spur new jobs in the non-basic sector by increasing local demand. Okay, so what's that mean? That means when Symantec brings in money, then all the people who work there consume local goods and services, and there's a multiplier that rolls through the local economy. So they create demand for more homes, they create demand for groceries, for automobiles, and all kinds of things. And then there's a population multiplier, new jobs in either basic or non-basic sector bring more people to the area, new job holders and their families. And there's a couple schools of thought about how population works in communities. And since we do a lot of modeling, econometric modeling, economists will tend to say that at the regional level, employment is what attracts population. And they develop models to work through how that works. it's not always the case. There are communities in the United States and Oregon that are attracting a large number of retirees, which could also maybe be thought of as a basic industry in some respects, in the absence of population. It may be one of the bigger influences in this state in the future has little to do with the fact that there's jobs here and the fact that we have a high quality of life and some other factors. So for those of you who've been around for a long time, you probably recall the editorials that Ed Whitelaw was writing about the second paycheck and that people are in this, Oregon's historically been a low wage state, people are willing to trade off money for other amenity. Okay, so I'm going to stop there, and I think we'll move on. Beth's going to talk a little bit about some of the numbers, and there's an awful lot of them that we have to share with you. And since Dan said hold your questions, I won't delay.
So just to start you off with a few numbers, quick overview of Springfield, comparing it to Lane County in the U.S., and I just want to point out this is 2000 information because that's when it's available for Springfield. What you'll see is that Springfield is generally younger than Lane County in the U.S., has lower educational attainment, so fewer people who have bachelor's degrees, lower income, has lower home ownership rates, and lower housing costs relative to Lane County. So Springfield's population is growing since 1990. Springfield's population has grown by a little over 12,500 people, and that's a 28% increase. And it's 21% of the growth in the county. The implication of a growing population, as Bob was saying, is that as you have population growth, you have demand for services that are consumed within the city, so non-basic services. Another trend is that population is aging, and this is happening everywhere. In this room, right now, we're all aging. So Springfield has more younger people, or it's had more younger people in 2000 compared to the state or the county. So Springfield's population is a little bit younger, but Springfield's fastest growing age group is the same age group that's the fastest growing across the U.S. That's the baby boomers, age 45 to 64. And in the long term, Lane County, the state's forecasting that Lane County is going to have more people who are 60 years plus in about 2030. So right now, people 60 years and over account for 17% of the county's population, and in 2030, they'll account for about a quarter of the county's population. There are a lot of implications to the fact that population is aging, and you're probably familiar with a lot of them. You'll have increasing retirements, and as a result of increasing retirements, you may get a few conflicting trends. So you may have some brain drain from people leaving the workforce. Also, people leaving the workforce will create opportunities for other workers, so you'll need replacement workers. Not necessarily young replacement workers, but maybe some people who have some experience, so you're moving people up the ladder. But also you may see some people working later into life. So they're not necessarily retiring in their early 60s or mid 60s. So that may create some competition with younger people who might move further in their careers. So there's a few conflicting things that are happening there. You'll also have increasing demand for services and products that are consumed by people 60 and older. And specifically I'm thinking about healthcare services, but also housing for seniors, and that's a variety of different housing types. You've got traditional single-family housing, perhaps multifamily housing, higher-end multifamily housing especially, assisted living facilities, active adult facilities, nursing home as people get older and older. So there'll be demand for all of those housing types also. Looking at what's happening with our income, Bob was talking about how Oregon's traditionally had lower income than other areas. And what you can see here is that Lane County, which you can't really see this color very well, Lane County is this line. Lane County's
income is below Oregon's traditional income. And also you can see over here, just an example in 2006, that Lane County has more people who have a lower income and fewer people in these higher income categories. 2006 data isn't readily available for Springfield, but what we could see is that in 2006, Springfield's wages were about equivalent to Lane County's at about $33,000 per job. In 1999, you saw that Springfield's wages, actually Springfield's household income was lower than Lane County's and Oregon's. I can't speak to whether that's changed at this point. So the implication of having lower income, or in the case of Springfield and Lane County, income that's about equivalent, is that we have opportunities to attract other types of businesses to Oregon. So for instance, we may be able to attract back office or call centers from other areas of the country that are higher wage. Bob was talking about how Springfield operates within the region of the Eugene-Springfield area, as well as the southern Willamette Valley. And looking at commuting information, we found that workers are both willing to commute to work. So 81% of residents of Springfield worked within the county, and the majority of them actually worked within Eugene. And workers in Springfield, most of them live within the county, with about 29% in Springfield and another 23% in Eugene. So people are, at this point at least, are willing to commute within the region, certainly within the Eugene-Springfield region and potentially within the southern Willamette Valley.
What's the date of this data?
2004. So, going back to that for a moment, this gives Springfield firms access to more educated people who are, well, Eugene typically has a more educated population than Springfield, so it gives Springfield access to Eugene's workforce. And it also gives Springfield access to workers throughout the Southern Willamette Valley. So, looking here at Lane County data, you can't really see it up here, but in your handout you can see that most of the employment is in the services. So in Lane County, 58% of employment is in their services, including retail. And the biggest employers are in retail, healthcare, and accommodation and food services. You've also got about 14% of employment in manufacturing and 16% in government. Looking at payroll among the services, you'll see that there's a lot of variation among services. Some services are high paying, such as management of companies and finance, and some services are lower paying, such as arts and entertainment and accommodation and food services. What you'll also see is in healthcare, you can see there's some variation. So in ambulatory care services, you have higher paying than you do in nursing and residential care facilities, which makes sense because the ambulatory care facilities tend to have higher requirements for skills. Looking at it in a little more detail, not surprisingly enough, retail tends to pay about $10,000 less than the county average, but again, some retail pays more. So in motor vehicle and parts dealers, you have a pay of about $38,000 compared to the $24,000 annual wage in retail overall. One of the county's strengths is manufacturing. We've got a lot of wood products and transportation manufacturing, and that's predominantly RVs. And in manufacturing, you get higher than average pay, which is, aside from the fact that it's a basic industry, another reason you want manufacturing. Agriculture and forestry are historically important in Lane County, and they continue to be important in Lane County. In 2007, ag resulted in about $139 million in gross sales, with the biggest types of agriculture being nurseries, fruit trees, and then some dairy products and poultry. I couldn't quite come across the information about forestry to tell us what the gross sales were in 2006. I should have that information soon. But payroll was about $35 million in 2006. About 15% of the timber that's harvested in Western Oregon is harvested in Lane County. And there's a lot of cord feed that are harvested here. Wow, this slide is really out of order. I apologize. Going back to services, it's not out of order, never mind. Looking at employment in Springfield rather than Lane County overall, Springfield's employment is dominated by services. The majority of services are either in retail, government, or healthcare. This is 2006 data, so this doesn't account for changes that we'll see coming up as a result of the hospital moving. You can see here the location of employers throughout Springfield. These larger dots represent, larger employers. And you can see that the employment is scattered throughout the city. There's a lot of employment along Main Street, but there's also a lot of employment in residential areas. And this map shows industrial employment. It's a little hard on this to see the difference, but industrial is in blue, and all the other employment, so that's commercial government employment, that's in red. So you'll see some of the larger industrial areas or areas of employment. Looking forward, the state forecasts employment growth for Lane County, and the state's forecasting that between 2006 and 16, the county's employment is going to grow by 22,700 jobs. Most of that's going to be in the service sector, and a lot of the service sector growth is going to be in healthcare and professional services. So this provides some opportunities for Springfield. You'll see government and then manufacturing growth is smaller than services. It's likely that Springfield's growth and employment will be similar to Lane County's, with some obvious areas of differences. So for instance, Springfield may see less employment growth in government because a lot of the government in the region is located over in Eugene, specifically at the university. But Springfield may see more growth in healthcare. We'll talk about that a little bit later. So going through the implications again. We talked about how Springfield is part of a regional economy, and we can't pull Springfield out of that economy. And that Springfield's able to attract labor from across the Eugene-Springfield region. The aging population is going to result in a lot of different potential things. We're not really sure what will happen, but clearly we'll need more retirement workers, and the state's got some ideas of that the most retirement workers will be in managerial and educational professions because that's the professions with the oldest average ages. There'll be increased demand for services from seniors, and retirements may also be offset by people remaining in the workforce longer. Looking at more implications, Springfield may be able to attract more back office work, although we'll talk a little bit more about what opportunities Springfield has for that in a few minutes. And services are likely to account for most of the growth in Springfield, as they're likely to across the nation and across the state. High quality natural resources are going to continue to be important to Springfield. So you have both in the ag and the farming, the forestry economy. And you also have tourism is reliant in a lot of cases on natural resources, both for recreation and also for maintaining environmental quality. So those are some of the local trends that we're talking about, and now going on and looking at some of the other factors that are less local trends that may affect Springfield in the longer term. So we've talked some about quality and availability of labor. We've talked about how aging workforce is likely to affect availability of labor in Springfield. Availability of educated, skilled labor is becoming more important as we go forward and we have a more technologically reliant economy. However, there will still be opportunities for jobs and occupations that require less education that are still relatively skilled. Increased energy prices are an issue that's on everybody's mind right now. And while we're looking in the long term, clearly people are thinking about the fact that energy prices have increased so much in the short term. It's not clear if energy prices are going to continue increasing the way they have been or are going to remain at current levels or a decrease as possible. A lot of the forecasts are predicting that energy prices will stay relatively high but not continue increasing the way they have. Whether that actually happens, it's a little bit difficult to predict. So some short-term effects of high energy prices is you've heard that there's probably been some decreases in discretionary driving, so people are driving maybe a little bit less for recreation or for combining their trips to the grocery store, that kind of thing. You see more use of alternative fuels, and you may see more use of alternative modes of transportation, or carpooling, or other forms of conservation. In the longer term, you may see changes in commuting patterns, and some of these commuting patterns, when you look at changes in commuting patterns, you have to look at how far people are actually commuting. So commuting within the Eugene-Springfield area, especially within the two cities, is shorter than it is, say, commuting between Eugene and Corvallis. So you have to look at these in perspective. There's also some evidence that housing prices may be decreasing in far-out suburbs, and this is seen more in some of the larger cities, such as Los Angeles. We're seeing that effect perhaps a little bit in Portland. And whether or not this is due to gas prices, it's a little early to tell that at this point. So in the Eugene-Springfield area, obviously you have a lot of people who live in rural areas. And it may be a little difficult to decide how strong a person's preference is to living in a rural area. How much are they really willing to pay to continue doing that? And it's difficult to predict that at this point. Another difficult to predict one is global climate change. Scientists are coming more and more to the consensus that there is some form of global climate change. It's really unclear what the effect of global climate change is going to be on the Northwest. The models at this point just aren't that clear. Some of the possible effects, or probable effects even, are decreased snowpack, more intense and more frequent flooding and droughts. And all of these may have effect, these may affect the area. With snowpack, you may have less winter skiing, other winter sports. You may have effects on agriculture with more flooding and droughts. You may have effects on imports from the global economy, so demand for a certain import and exported goods may change. It's really hard to tell that at this point. Some other trends, we're seeing continued domestic outsourcing of back office functions and call centers. There's only a certain number of call centers that Eugene Springfield is likely to attract. We're currently attracting call centers, at least in part, because we have a pool of available labor. At some point, call centers will cease to be attracted to our area because that pool will just not be big enough. So you'll also have continued impacts of the high quality resources in the area as long as we continue to have good environmental quality and access to these resources. And globalization, as I talked about, could have mixed impacts. So just looking briefly at some areas for potential growth, one way to look at areas that Springfield may grow in is to look at clusters. And clusters are groups of companies that have located in an area and that benefit from being co-located within an area, even though they may be competitive. So for instance, Silicon Valley is your quintessential cluster. You've got a lot of competing software companies together, but they have a pool of labor that they can all pull from and manufacturers of products that they need, which, yeah. Call centers here in the Eugene Springfield area is an example of a cluster. So starting looking at Oregon's clusters, because Springfield is a part of the Oregon economy, is likely to have similar advantages as what Oregon has. This graph shows wage change between 2003 and 2005, and then employment change between 2003 and 2005. And what it shows you is that Maryland's goods is not a fast-growing cluster, but it's certainly one that's grown in pay. You'll see up here transportation equipment. That's one of the faster-growing clusters in Oregon, but its pay has actually decreased a little bit. Got medical products, this big one of business services, electronics, IT, and communication equipment. Those are both fairly low, and that may be a function of the dot-com bust that we saw earlier in the decade. And you see a decrease in the metal products cluster. So this just gives an idea, some, of what Lane County is operating in the Southern Willamette Valley. Here we have a list of the clusters in Lane County from the same period. And looking at Springfield, looking at the employment in Springfield in 2006 and the state's forecast for growth over the 2006-2016 period. Some of these sectors with the most potential for growth are obviously medical and social assistance. We have administrative services, construction, which is often related to population growth, and accommodation and food services. I feel like I'm just plowing through here. Can I pause and ask questions before I go into survey results?
Let's take a couple of minutes. We're going to take a break right at the top of the hour, so it's kind of up to you all how much you want to break up your information. But let's take a short break, and if there are any questions that are clarifying, was not a big philosophical thing, maybe we can have a few at this moment.
Yes, sir.
I have a question on employment. As the baby boomers meet retirement age, and a lot of them are expected to work beyond that, is it anticipated they'll continue in their primary vocation, or they will end that and start flipping burgers or doing something that maybe is not as high paid?
I think you'll see some of both. That's what the forecast that I've been looking at have been talking about.
That last slide that you showed us there, it's got a heck of a lot of information on the previous one.
This one?
The one about the Oregon's clusters. Is that, if we, can you get a larger version of that to us somehow?
Yeah, sure.
We can send you a link to it. There's a whole report that the Employment Division put together on the cluster shorts. It has a page-size graph of that.
Great.
You know, a lot of this, I've seen a lot of this research before. Joel Courtney did a lot of this cluster stuff. But I think the irony of this, and I've always been just a tad skeptical of it, is if you would have went back in 1980 and did this exercise, nowhere on this chart would have been RV or transportation. Nowhere on this chart would have been back call centers or back offices. Nowhere on this chart would have been high tech.
I think you have to look at both what you've got now and what some of the potential is.
I think that's one of the biggest challenges of planning for economic growth is the uncertainty. If between 1990 and 2000, if you look at the industrial classifications, there were entire industries that did not exist in 1990, anything related to the World Wide Web. Yeah. Didn't exist in 1990. It was a giant sector of the economy. The trick for what we're doing here is to try and figure out what kind of space are those jobs going to need, because that's a land use planning part of it. As Danwell knows and many others do here, there's other parts of this that are really important, like education, and this area is really pretty well served by education. We've got a great community college, we've got a major research institution in this community, good school system. So those things kind of fall outside of the purview of the land use planning part, but what kind of space are those jobs going to demand? And I think that's something that maybe we can talk about a little bit more. Beth showed a map of the location of employment, which I think is interesting. I didn't have the chance to overlay that on a zoning map yet, but one of the things that we'll bring back at the next meeting is how much of that employment is located in non-employment zones or in residential areas. And that's pretty important because if the city wants to pursue a policy of allowing dispersed employment, you can actually accommodate a fair amount of your employment in places where you might not think you can. And Portland Metro's done these studies, and I think they found somewhere on the order of 40% of their employment was getting accommodated through residential areas of infill or redevelopment, which is really substantial.
It depends a lot on what the community chooses to go after. You know, from my experience of having done this for a long time, had the area not adopted the Metro Plan, created those, what they're calling them, technology or special light industrial sites, we probably wouldn't have the industry we have today. And we certainly didn't know what we were doing, and we did. In fact, most of the assumptions we made about what the sites needed to look like were completely wrong.
Yeah, and just to add on to that a little bit, a few years ago, the governor sponsored the industrial opportunities study, which resulted in a number of changes to the Golden Line administrative rule. The administrative rule that governs how cities do economic development planning. And part of the foundational theory of the land use program is that this seems painfully obvious, but if you don't have the sites, you can't get the employment, so you can't get it. And part of the trick here is going to be to say, well, what kinds of sites do we need? Because not all of your employment, your future employment, is going to necessarily be accommodated through redevelopment and infill.
Well, a couple of things, and I know we want to get on to the survey, but it is, for those who, this may be your first time kind of looking at this information, a couple of things that are pretty common to these exercises. One is you got a snapshot, and you saw some household income levels, you know, with Springfield's education, household income is a snapshot. The moving trend of that, though, there are some things that we can kind of count on happening. We are catching up in several of those areas, for example. And that trend will probably continue. Population's going to continue. Some aging things, we can't really stop that in this room right now. We're pretty good. Sorry. So this is real time. The other things are really difficult, and I guess my experience has been to not get too hung up on energy, house price. If we were doing this 6 months ago, we would have house prices doing this. Well, it's not a year ago, but obviously we know that things can change. And if there's any lack of examples, just look at the early 80s when everybody's predictions were thrown out the window for Lane County and Springfield especially. But the whole thing about this kind of exercise is to say, what do we think we know will happen? And then you have to have the flexibility to take opportunities that come in. And that's, but Lee's right, I mean, 20 years ago, almost half the economy here, we couldn't even have guessed. 5 years ago, the medical cluster that we are identifying did not exist in Springfield. It was not an opportunity to call it that. So what, from now until 20 years from now, we will be more surprised than anything. And there'll be a few things that we'll say, yeah, we kind of knew this was going to happen, but most of it will be, I didn't know that was going to happen. And to have the opportunity to take advantage in the global and the state economy is probably what we're tying the land use for. But anyway, it's just, I think it's just an ongoing kind of organic thing, and slides make it look static, and it really isn't at all static. Are we ready for the results? Oh, Carrie?
Sorry. I just had a basic question. I noticed that the city limits in the UGB are different, and whose policy, which, you don't necessarily have to go back to that, but who, which government level's policy controls the area outside the city limits but inside the UGB?
The city will have what's called an urban growth management agreement, which dictates how that happens. And so I haven't reviewed that.
But I mean, just on the generally, if you're in that area, are you walking into the city for a permit or the county for a permit? If you're outside the city limits?
You walk into the
city.
As long as you're inside the UGB.
Okay. Like Glenwood.
All right.
County commissioners that are currently in the city.
How long do you think the survey results segment will take?
It's very short.
Okay. Shall we go forward and then take a break right after that?
Yes. All
right.
So these are just brief results, hitting a few of the highlights.
This is the survey that we keep referencing that 200 citizens have taken?
Okay. Yes. That will be closing up on May 27th.
Okay.
So if you want to take it and you haven't, do it soon. So most respondents felt that Springfield was a better place to live than it was 10 years ago, and that it was growing at the right rate, approximately. Clearly there were some people who had other opinions than that. People think that Springfield should accommodate and manage growth. That was a pretty clear response. And that density is about right. So they think residential density is about right, and that commercial and industrial density, they may be willing to consider increasing that, which isn't surprising. Some of the big areas of concern are housing and jobs, which of course isn't surprising either. People are concerned about the cost of housing and affordability and the availability of family wage jobs. And clearly the two are connected. If you don't have enough family wage jobs, then it's harder to afford housing. People are also very concerned about environmental quality. So they want good jobs and affordable housing, and they also want a healthy environment and resource protection. Quality of life is, unsurprisingly again, important. And a lot of the quality of life issues that they're concerned about are some of them aren't actually planning. So public safety, pedestrian and bicyclist safety, those aren't much planning, particularly related to this project. But they're also concerned about good governance. So some of the policies that the majority of respondents, usually at least 70% of respondents, indicated that there was some support for was encouraging infill and redevelopment, both on the residential and industrial, commercial. People seemed excited about
redevelopment in downtown and Glenwood. I'm supportive of that. Obviously, maintaining environmental quality. In terms of helping or recruiting, helping existing businesses or recruiting new businesses, people are generally responsive to helping expand new existing businesses, rather. There seemed to be some potential support for a UGB expansion under some circumstances. So it was clear that people were concerned that we consider measures to increase land use efficiency as well as UGB expansions. And we didn't ask many questions about that at this point because that's premature. And that was the end of this piece. We can take a break.
Okay.
Unless you have any questions.
I think we don't see any hands, so everybody please come back in about 5 minutes. We'll take a short break. Thank you. Please if I get the lyrics.
It was good. Knowing I was going to see you, I sat down and entered all of these breakdowns, well, some of them were in. So this is the area of cultural objects over the last 10.5 years, metro area. And then what I do is I break them down between gateway hotels, Franklin Boulevard versus non-Franklin Boulevard. This just gives you a sense of market share between
And then all those people living in the
Well, and if this comes, this is like one of the things I wanted, I really wanted this, then don't hesitate to ask.
I don't.
It's in their brand new jail, unused for a decade. I don't think Jesus is
they're frustrated, but that's what they're
I think a lot of those people have to be done. I guess the question is, are you interested in development?
Everything that would help educate me,
I'm trying to understand more of what you guys are explaining to us.
high school library.
Was there a fee to go in the library?
It's open to anybody now, but what I was actually thinking is if we could develop a webpage with some rates for the committee and get it considered. There's an awful lot of issues available, and I don't want to just stop there. I appreciate someone coming to ask us from a lay person's perspective. We didn't know what to look for.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah, you might want to bring it to our
Before we get started on the next part of this, which I promise you will be more interactive, correct? Are there any lingering questions that somebody, George?
I just wanted to clarify something about this survey. Maybe we talked about this already, but I mean, it's not really a survey.
It's a questionnaire, it's not a random sample survey, so it's just...
And are there any controls in terms of if someone wants to log on and take the survey 20 times?
I tried. You can't do it.
You can.
You can. You do it once from your computer. Now, obviously, I could go over to the library and do that, and I promise I didn't, but just to test that, I tried to go back in and change an answer or start over, and it wouldn't let me.
Who wrote the survey?
We put the survey together.
You did? And is that a survey you've used in other market areas?
We've used it in a number of communities. And, I guess I would encourage the committees, the Planning Commission and Council, to not read more into that than you can. It's an anecdotal survey. The population is self-selecting, but the intent is to gather some information from residents to try and identify sort of the range of attitudes and opinions that exist in issues and concerns in the community. But it is not a survey that you can say this is representative of the population of Springfield. So it's not a survey that we're going to be able to bring back to you at some point and say, here are all of the policy directions that the population of this community will support. And even if we could, there's not going to be consensus around this.
It's more along the lines of large focus group.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it had open-ended questions on it.
It does have some.
How many people responded?
208 so far.
208?
Yeah, what you really presented us with was more of an aggregation. What was the range? I mean, were there interesting things that percolated out of those open-ended comments?
We can bring back the some table. We can post up the results to you.
Nothing too surprising, really.
We haven't gone through the open-ended comments at this point. I wanted to close before aggregating that up.
And I think
a question on that, by the way, the survey, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk there. Was this survey broken down also by age parameters and things
we can do those kinds of
nature,
things.
Or was it just one?
To go back to George's comment, there are a number of people from other communities that filled it out, so we have the ability, at least if they reported right.
The only hope I would have is that it is used properly, because sometimes these things take on a life of their own, and much down the road, someone in the City Council or Planning Commission referring to a survey of 200 Springfielders and say, obviously, we want more growth or less growth or high density or more sprawl or something. And I would probably say I know 20 people, at least from Eugene, that filled out the survey, which is legitimate. I don't think it was on the city's website, so somebody from Schenectady could have filled it out as well. But I do believe that if you took the survey, Tim, did you take the survey?
Mm-hmm.
So what I felt most useful was actually just the questions. I don't know how the answers are going to fall. I don't know if it's something I'd look at twice, frankly. But I think the questions, there are a couple of them, are at the crux of what we need to really figure out. Should the city be involved in assertively going out for future growth? That's kind of like, that's a pretty big question. And the other question is about, does the city need to grow in order to provide the kind of economic and other future that we want? That was another one that I thought, that's a good question too. So, but the answers are going to be, I don't know the value if you only have 200 people in Nashville and you have about 400 people did the same survey.
250 people in Nashville.
Okay.
More or less the same question.
How are we distributing the survey? I know I got an email to fill it out, but 200 people doesn't seem like a lot, in my opinion. But how are we distributing it, get the word out so we can get people to fill it out and get accurate?
We placed an ad in the Springfield Extra portion of the Register Guard. We've also, I had a couple spots on KLCC. The other night, actually promoting both the public workshop that was on Tuesday night, but I also referred to the survey. So we've been on the radio as well. Website, also referring it all to you, and hopefully word of mouth from all of you and to people you know or your agencies and whatnot. So those are really the main ways.
And what would be a reasonable number of people to fill out that survey for you to feel comfortable with the results?
To feel comfortable with the results. The results are what they are. It's a non-random sample. It's not representative. I'm going to keep saying this because this is not something you can say is representative of the community. It's just a self-selecting sample of people. My perspective on the utility of this, and I do believe there is utility in conducting an exercise like this, and I think Dan pointed out some interesting parts that I hadn't thought of, is that it does identify the range of attitudes and teases out some of the issues in the community. So it gives you some information to build from. We said it's like doing a big focus group. It's like having 200 people show up at a public meeting where you're asking some fairly detailed questions. People who come to public meetings are also self-selecting, or people that don't come to public meetings. I think that information is still useful. It's useful in helping the city meet its goal one obligation. But you can get 1,000 responses to it, and I'd still give you the exact same answer I'm giving you right now.
Yeah, but 40,000 would be an impact.
40,000, you probably start getting to the point where you can
start.
I think to Tim's point, if we spent the money to actually do a study where the error factor might be within acceptable range, we would have to kind of do what we did in the early 90s and really hire a firm to go out and say, we're going to have to talk to 600 family members, and not randomly necessarily, but really look for a cross section. I think we're going to get there on a couple of the major questions. I think Springfielders will weigh in over the next couple of years through some votes, perhaps even, or councilors in elections about our growth. But I tell you, I often caution just, if you went and you stopped 200, the next 200 people you see in the street and ask them their opinion, you would get a wide range, but you wouldn't say that represents Springfield. You just can't right now at this point. But
if you wanted a random sample, it probably cost us, about $10,000. And then give up 300 to 400 to give you a representative sample drawn randomly.
At least you'd have survey. You'd have to make it a much shorter
service. I think if you haven't and you want to take the survey, you have until when?
May 27th.
It takes about 15 minutes. It's really some good questions. It does ask you if you live in or have a business in Springfield, how old you are, if you own your home, how far you drive to work, all that kind of stuff, which is cool, and we use the survey to break that down. Maybe we'll get some gems out of there, but please log on and don't try to do it twice, it won't let you. So let's, we should probably move on to number three.
Let's move on to the discussion.
You've gone to the interactive part of our evening tonight.
So I'm going to remain seated during this. Now that we've been anesthetizing with mind-numbing facts or data, we really want to have a discussion about this. And to tee this up for you, we made some assumptions about future growth in Springfield that we think are relevant, and we want to run these by you and see whether you have opinions about whether these are right. The first one is the job, and I would expand this to job and population growth will continue in Springfield. And so that's a foundational assumption, and there's discussions going on about how much population will grow, and that's a separate process. The second one is...
Are you asking for input on each one of these right now?
Not just now. Let me go through them, and then we'll come back. And second one is Springfield wants to be a complete community. So what is a complete community? It's a term of art, planner jargon. But you can think of it as a self-contained community. The community wants to have a balance of jobs and housing, or at least those opportunities. Doesn't necessarily mean that people who live here will continue to work here. But you want to have all of those things that make the community a complete community. Springfield will continue to function within the regional economy. You can't tease them apart. There may be some trends that that lead to even more integration of that in the future, as Beth described. Ratios of types of employment growth in Springfield will be similar to the regional forecast. This is kind of a big assumption, and I'll make a couple comments about the way that the state does their forecast. One is that they're very conservative. A few weeks ago, I was meeting with the state economic development staff person for the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and we were talking about regional industrial site location, and we got to talking about Lebanon got a Lowe's warehouse that's 600,000 square feet and 750 employees. They can't forecast that. That just happened. They chose to locate there as opposed to Yakima or you name it, some other well-sited location in the Northwest. So those things, these numbers are relative. But I do think we know how things are trending. Employment growth has shifted a lot towards services. One of the things that I think is interesting about Lane County that doesn't come out that easily in the data that Beth presented is this region has held its own in manufacturing relative to the rest of the country. In fact, we've been competitive relative to the rest of the country. Part of that is in an industry that may be somewhat at risk, which is transportation manufacturing, specifically RVs. But we still have about 10 to 14%, depending on what geographic area you're looking at, in manufacturing. And I think that this region will continue to have manufacturing jobs and wood products and potentially agricultural processing and some of the other things that that other regions haven't been as competitive on. So that's a big assumption, but the question is, do you think that manufacturing is going to get a lot bigger, or is it going to shrink? And those all have implications for the land needs. In terms of the economic development strategy, we can say this with a fair amount of certainty because we've gone into other communities and the goals are remarkably similar, as you might anticipate. City wants to attract higher wage jobs, wants to diversify the economy, and according to some indices, Lane County is actually relatively diverse compared to the state, but the state is not that diverse relative to other states in the nation. So diversification, I think, is important. For those of us that were around in the 80s or paid attention to what happened in the 80s, I think that it was probably not an event that we'd like to go through again. Provide a sufficient number of sites for long-term and short-term site needs or needs for employment. So to make sure that there's land available for the kind of employment that the city wants to attract, because you can be aspirational in your planning and that you think is going to be attracted here. And then make strategic infrastructure investments to accommodate growth. And I think that's a pretty important one, and it's one that communities sometimes miss, which is you have a huge huge club to guide where things happen, and it happens to be the enormous sums of money that jurisdictions spend on putting infrastructure in. And then the last one we got on here is Springfield will not have funds to provide major subsidies to attract firms. You may have other things that you can provide, but having the ability to, for the city to provide those incentives outside of other state programs seems unlikely to us. That's, moving on to the discussion part, we have four questions for the committee to deal with the rest of this meeting. What are the assumptions reasonable? Have we missed any important assumptions that you think we should carry forward into the next phase of our work? What are the implications of these assumptions for possible economic growth in Springfield? And also of the information that we reviewed earlier. And then are there other important influences or the key trends that you think we missed in this? So I'm going to stop talking and Dan's going to facilitate.
You know, look, can we go back to the assumptions? Yes. Are these assumptions reasonable? Have we missed any? Is there any anxiety if we just went around the room person to person and ask each person on the committee? This is a real bedrock kind of thing. If they agree or disagree, a lot or a little, might not know. And start with Dave. Just a short statement, so everybody gets a chance to talk tonight.
You mentioned Lowe's district use and center in Lebanon. Neither Eugene or Springfield had the land to offer them to even put it in. Lebanon had. So we definitely need land to be able to get companies to actually come in. If you've got 5 acres, they need 50 acres. We won't be there.
Steven? At this point, I don't have a whole lot to offer. Okay. Yeah.
I don't have much to say at this point.
All right.
Can we clarify something? When it says the city, are we talking about the city government, the city council? Are we talking about the community? What were you talking about?
I think we're broadly talking about the community here, but if the group wants to put parameters on that, I think that's important. Part of the reason for the stakeholder committee is to give recommendations to council without policies. So that's how I would define it, George.
Okay. Well, in that case, you know, my comment would be just about the strategic infrastructure investment. You know, from what I can see, the city is strapped with its capital improvements program right now, and whether you know the community wants that or not, it's kind of would be impossible given the current budget to envision what type of strategic infrastructure things could happen within the next 5 years outside of the required capital improvement program.
Okay.
Well, I guess I'd talk about the improvements for infrastructure also. If the infrastructure isn't there or readily expanded, you're not going to get any growth. And that's a bigger incentive than any other financial help that you can give somebody. It actually makes it possible for somebody to expand.
Let's get myself for a minute and go on to leave.
Okay. I think generally the assumptions are on target. I think the mix is probably right. My guess is that people and the expression of wanting a better job choice is pretty consistent with where most people are at. I think that Dave hit it on the head. From my experience of having done development work in this area for a number of years, there's a lot of those kinds of things that we had opportunities to site, but had no place to put them. The biggest factor on those large facilities is access to the interstate system. And I think you've seen that with the Target in Albany, the New Center in Lebanon, all up and down the road. If you go to Wilsonville, the Waremark facility up there. Even in this community where the Pepsi facility is now, it's all about access to roads. So that's a choice. If we want that kind of opportunity, we need to figure out a way to do it there. In fact, I would make the case that the RV industry located in Coburn, because it's easy to do it.
You can see it.
You can, well, it's not so much you can see them, that's not the factor. People who spend $1 million a vehicle will find it. It's being able to get out and test them. That's an issue. I think most of it's going to be in office-like structures, if you're talking about the basic wage thing. And I've argued on the Planning Commission for a long time that our zoning is too split up. Kind of argue, just put it very crassly, you need pretty sites and ugly sites, and we don't have a lot of pretty sites. Mackenzie Gateway's about all we've got in the area. Most of the ones in Eugene are pretty awful. If you compare them, if you go to the Portland area or Wilsonville or down in the California government, Washington. But not every business needs that kind of wants to pay for it. Like Tim's business is perfectly fine over there. Good access to transportation looks great. So I think there's some trade-offs there. I think we have to make room for both. And we're a little challenged. I think one of our biggest challenges is what to do with Glendale. And everybody envisions that as a high-rise kind of community that has all the features that would make a great industrial site, too. But I'm not sure you can do something about it. So I think that would be
right on that
show. Yeah. There's the challenge.
Carrie, what do you think about the assumptions?
I think basically they're, you know, in general, they're exactly where you start. And the decisions that we make and the recommendations we make may influence some of each of these factors. I was a little bit surprised to hear you say you thought that the Oregon economy was less diverse than a lot of others. I come from Alaska, and the Oregon economy seems incredibly diverse to me. But I certainly agree with the base assumption that we want a diverse economy. So I think this is a great start.
John?
I agree with the assumptions overall. I'm not a developer. I don't know the first thing about developing, really. I'm learning a lot. But what is to say that the city doesn't give more developers incentive to put the infrastructures in once we have the commercial property set aside?
Well, that particular assumption derives from public finance, and I think George made the comment. There just isn't the money. We're doing work in expanding areas of Portland Metro right now, and the places they're expanding in are looking at huge infrastructure deficits. Damascus is 10,000 acres, and Metro is predicting 60,000 people in that community. We estimate they got a $400 million service gap to build that area out over a 20-year period. We don't know enough about Springfield yet to make any of those kinds of claims, but we're just not in that area anymore where the city can punch stuff through without some kind of participation. If you look at the major things that have happened in Springfield, particularly with Peace Health, that's been a public-private partnership that made that happen.
Yeah. But you know, Bob, you have to be careful with that, because I would challenge George's assumption a little bit. Residential rarely pays for itself, although they're planning new subdivisions within the system that you put them in. Industrial stuff usually does. Usually pays for itself and has more of a return to the community.
Well, I guess my point, I want to clarify the bullet point that talks about make strategic investments to accommodate growth. The city does have choices within your capital improvement program of where you make those investments, and those choices can direct things to some places and to other places, and so that's more what I was referring to, George, or what we were trying to get at in that statement, rather than saying we're going to go out and put a bunch of infrastructure out into some other place. To attract growth into that area. So I think hopefully we certainly recognize, and hopefully everybody else does, that pot is shrinking, and more of that money is having to go into maintenance, deferred maintenance that's occurring, and there's not as much to accommodate. I think it's going to be an issue. It's going to be an issue that's going to affect housing affordability. It's going to be an issue that, that affects our competitiveness potentially.
Okay. Naomi?
I do agree with the assumptions, especially with the city wants to attract higher wage jobs, because I do believe that there are enough jobs for those who are seeking jobs. And those who are less educated are finding that there aren't enough jobs being offered to those who are less educated, and they need more money and to afford to go to school and get a higher educated job. But if there were more jobs available that offered higher wages, people would be able to expand their knowledge as well. So,
thanks. Well put. Thanks.
Okay.
I agree with the assumptions pretty well. A couple areas I want to comment on. One is that last line up there. I don't think it's the city's place to provide subsidies to attract firms. I think you can have land for them and resources available. But the clear example of that is the Sony story. It turned out to not be a good community investment, although it did help out Sacred Heart in the long run, which is a nonprofit hospital. They got the building for half price, whatever it was. And the other one is that in the job distribution, I think this area, it's my feeling that there's a higher percentage of people that are either self-employed, working from home by necessity, because there's not a lot of good wage jobs in the area. So whether they're working online, doing illegal activities because of our revolving jail system, career criminals, they're invisible, but in another way, they're part of the economy.
Don?
For the most part, I agree with them. Two bullet points just want to discuss. One is the Springfield continue to function within the regional economy. I guess it's your definition of that. I would probably expand that. It seems narrow-minded to me, but you know, more it's not just the regional, but the national and the global economy, especially with technology these days and importing and exporting. You know, I think local economy or regional economies impact that we become more and more dependent on national and global economy. The other one is around the following up on Guy's comment is that Springfield will not have funds to provide major subsidies to attract firms. Depends on your definition of major. But I know when Symantec chose to relocate from downtown Eugene to Springfield, number one concern was around space. We need land to build and expand and grow our business. So that was our number one priority. But secondly, the incentives to move from tax incentives was certainly an attraction to us. And I think when we start competing for businesses up and down the I-5 corridor, land is probably the number one factor, but other incentives become important when you start narrowing it down to your top two or three choices. And so whether that's the city's responsibility, state's responsibility, county, you know, I think it becomes a factor. It's just a matter of what you determine as being a major incentive. Yeah.
Well put.
Okay,
Tim?
I agree with you, Bill. Whether we have a 20% increase in manufacturing, I'd be hard-pressed to believe that with the federal government buildings operating right now. So I'm not sure what we're going to do for jobs. Because we can only recycle our dollars so much. And I'm seeing it all the time because we're watching companies disappear left and right. It's pretty bleak in the manufacturing sector with the cost of raw materials climbing. The only product that's not climbing is wood. If they could figure out how to make the gasoline out of wood, we'd be in good shape.
We might be there.
Working on that.
How about you, Donna? How do you feel the assumptions that were...
You know, I agree with Lee. He made a lot of really good points. And being the wife of somebody who's self-employed, I'm really grateful to be in a community that is so self-employment friendly, because I can't go one day without meeting somebody who doesn't own their own company and is thriving and is in a community that is so embracive of that goal, that they're doing things their way and setting their own goals and, you know, just blazing their own trail. And that's great to live in such a wonderful community. And as far as bringing other jobs, I'm kind of biased. I love living here, and if people realize what we all realize of living in here, that they're going to come here and they're going to realize that they can accommodate how much they need and what they need in our community, that we can provide for them, and come here anyway. Just like the hospital did, just like Jerry's did, and Walmart, and everybody else. They're going to realize what a great community that they are coming into and being a part of.
Anything left to say after all of that? Go ahead.
In general, I agree with the assumptions. I think it's reasonable that the community wants to attract higher wage jobs. I have a question of what a complete community means and what that definition encompasses. And a lot of this discussion is new for me, frankly. I'm not used to sitting around talking about industry and development and economic growth. So it's great to hear the discussion around these topics. And I would say that when I read the line, make strategic infrastructure investments to accommodate growth, where my mind goes personally is being strategic about planning and looking at the resources that we have and the land that we have that is also of value to us, like farmland and floodplains and good water quality. So from my profession and my perspective, strategic investments mean protecting that while balancing the common interest of any person, which is we need to make a living. So how can we do that while protecting what is of value to, you know, the majority of our Oregonians?
I think that's all of those are really interesting things. I guess I just might repeat a couple things and weigh in on some others. I think manufacturing will be a larger number. I think we've kind of run a cycle, and in the eastern part of the country, they really have. Old manufacturing has run down, but biomanufacturing, intellectual management, the next wave, I don't believe our manufacturing days are done. They're just done in what we used to manufacture to a great extent. I totally agree with Don. We're not in a regional economy. We're in a global economy. In fact, I would say we're in a much more global economy than we are a regional economy. Don's company could be anywhere. And we better get used to that fact that the next, 100,000 jobs that come to this region are going to be mostly because people want to be here, not because they need to be here. And that's a huge shift, paradigm shift. I think funding, if you said this is going to make our community twice as good as it could have been, you have to be willing to pay the price because other communities are going to want the same. I agree with the assumptions, and you could probably run these up and down I-5 corridor and not get too much argument as you kicked it out. We have urban renewal. I think we need to use those funds really wisely, and I think the private-public partnerships are something that do work. If the project's big enough, there's money enough, then transportation and other infrastructure improvements can accommodate that. I don't take it for granted that job growth will continue in Springfield. All you have to do is look at Corvallis, where job growth has actually shrunk. And so it's not a given that a community can actually make certain policies that put an end to job growth and population growth. And that happens on rare occasions, but it does happen. The other thing that I don't know I would add up there, but there's an assumption generally, and I saw it in the first few slides, that people want to come out west, and it's still kind of that way, and people from Michigan and other places where the old economy is still spinning down and have a west coast presence. I don't think we're done with that. I think Springfield will benefit by that. And I think that's about it.
Yeah. One thing that nobody's brought up, about the overall effect it will have, and it's on that point about the Springfield being a complete community. Where do you make that definition? Something that hasn't really happened for quite a while that is big now, obviously, is trials. For the next 5 years, we're going to have year after year of national meets, national attention, and in some respects, world attention when we're talking about the trials. So people are going to be paying attention to this area. And what is going on here? What is the community doing? Obviously, the first attention point will be Eugene itself, Track City USA. But what is also around it? People are going to be coming here from around the country to see what's going on. How well do we work with one another? What do we have to offer? There's going to be a lot of information guides being handed out to people that come here. What is in Lane County? What is in Eugene? What is in Springfield?
And I would just personally like to see not, well, I agree Springfield should have its own amount of things to offer. I just wouldn't like to see too much detachment from Eugene because of what it will have to offer for Springfield's benefit down the road, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll ever be separated too far from Eugene, but I do see that's a good point about the complete city, because there's, I think there was a time when there was Springfield, and I still have people come to the counter and say, so this is a bedroom community? I think the definition and the look of a bedroom community is basically, let's have some good roads and housing to get to the real city, and you drive in and out of the city. And I sense, and again, this is non-scientific, that most Springfielders don't want to be considered a bedroom community to Eugene or anything else. I think they'd like to have their own schools and streets and civic life and make their own decisions. And I don't believe that, my personal belief is that the best we can do isn't going to be a really excellent bedroom community, but sometimes we look a little bit like that. As far, I want to make one more comment about the zoning thing. We are so far ahead because of zoning that it's unbelievable. I think there's a great debate, and it's a worthy debate, about whether you should offer a nickel to come here. But on that one, we are, I don't think that Sony's, I don't think Sony wanted to leave, and I don't think that's one of those things you can't predict. They came, and that industry turned while they were here, and but I would think that lots and lots of people would say, because they did come here, there's many things that we can count. So, but I think when you go out to attract any new business, you are taking a bit of a gamble that in their cluster, things may change, and we may be saying goodbye to some RV manufacturers that a year ago we would have said they're solid and strong. You can't always predict. Is it aimed here to have some sort of a give and take philosophical thing now about you wanted to kind of put some?
We can. I think let me make a couple of suggestions here about how we might modify these to at least put some sideboards on. This is part of the reason why I wanted to have some assumptions here, so that we know what the playing field is we're looking at. The first one, job growth, will continue. I think that Dan took a little bit of a different interpretation, and I think you're right. The city could clearly adopt policies that would push job growth other places. So I would propose to change the wording somehow to reflect that what you want to do is have job growth occurring more or less at the same rate as population growth, that you don't want to have population growth occurring much faster than job growth and becoming more of a bedroom community, which is part of what we would define as a complete community, a place where you can live, work, shop, and recreate without moving around too much. A couple other things that came out of this that I thought were kind of interesting or could be potential assumptions. One is maybe an assumption about Springfield will make the best use of their existing infrastructure investments, and the city's investing a whole lot in that now. And then one that Dan mentioned was about the tools that you have, the tools of the trade for economic development, and to use those tools widely. You've got an urban reserve area, public-private partnerships. I don't know if Springfield still has an enterprise zone or not, but those are tools that you have that exist that don't require any additional action at this point.
So those all sound aspirational as opposed to being base assumptions. We aspire to have job growth equal population growth, and we aspire to use our tools wisely. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think that's the full philosophical discussion that you get in here, and that's why we were making that assumption. And at least my interpretation of what Council and the Planning Commission told us to do at the beginning of this is first to get through it, but second, Springfield's not they're not a community that wants to have growth management policies that shunt your growth someplace
right.
else. So that they do embrace.
So it would go under the city wants to part of those.
Yeah.
Where does the strategic sort of assets that we have or strategic advantages come into play?
Well, from a theoretical perspective, what we do is we're trying to give some direction on what your economic development strategy is. And then what we do is we go back and look at your economic development potential, your comparative advantages, and do an assessment of, are you simply trying to do things that don't appear to be possible within how your local economy works.
For example, I think the biggest...
Yeah, I'll give you an example.
the biggest advantage, strategic advantage that we have actually on both sides is where we're at on I-5. I-5 is our biggest advantage between the others. I can't tell you the number of requests that I used to get when I was running the industrial development program, that sort of their, one of the top three parameters was 5 minutes of I-5.
Yeah, that's
both, particularly in manufacturing, most of the market is a day's drive north or a day's drive south.
That's a challenge for Springfield too, and it's a challenge that we'll get into discussions about later.
Another one that's emerging, I don't think people really realize, I only do because it's my business now, is utilities. As we go into the climate change issues and we look at what others are forced to do, Springfield and Eugene too will continue to have some of the lowest electricity rates around, considerably less. Our rate here is about 5 cents a kilowatt hour compared to Southern California, with 17 to 12, and it'll go up about 50 to 100% in the next 5 years. Ours probably won't go up at all, or very little.
George? I just want to play devil's advocate here. I think we've talked about how you can't predict things that happen, and I think, you know, if we focus on I-5, who may be missing something, there's a lot of talk now that because truck transportation is going to be so incredibly expensive that we may be going back to rail as a more important thing. So maybe our rail location is more important than our interstate. But so just, you know, these are the kind of things I think we need to...
Yeah, we typically consider all of those transportation assets. We consider workforce an asset. And coming back to, I think, the points about a national and global economy are really important. In part, you function within a regional economy because people have the ability to move around to jobs at this point. And as Beth was maybe implying, that energy prices may become cost prohibitive and that people begin to, out of necessity, have to move closer. We think there's some other things that will happen before you see a big response in that context, and certainly our regional market is not Atlanta, for example.
Don?
What George was saying, if that is a very good possibility, because we have no clue where the energy prices are going, whether they're going to dip, whether they're going to stay where they are. And there has been talk for a long time that more of the companies are going to rail just because it's more cost effective and it's easier on the roads in general. Now, are we also wanting to look at the consideration that some of these companies that might be coming in that are going to be using rails are going to want to kind of build their companies around the rails so that they're more, their closer proximity to what they're going to have to use as far as transports?
And this is one of those things where I think, you know, it's so difficult because you could see this and you could even take trends and draw lines out and say, at this point, rail intersects and we're going to build an infrastructure of rail, and then a hydrogen car comes along. I think what we have is an I-5 corridor that's going to be traveled by some kind of vehicle for a very long time. At the other time, you can't be dumb and just say, well, you know, they're going to go back to 37 cents a gallon. That's how old I am. But I do think being poised for change is really critical, and that's what the whole exercise is, because there is unpredictable kinds of things that we're dealing with. Even, again, as a geographer, go back 6 months, and who would have predicted some of the things that are outlined? And again, the Sony thing is very, very, very... I mean, I looked at my kids who started downloading music, not illegally, but, you know, I said, you're going to put Sony out of business. And you know what? It's one of those things like, don't cross your eyes because it'll stay that way. It came true. Sony went out of business in Springfield. Not because just my kids, mostly your kids. But I told them, you keep downloading that music and Sony's going to have to close up here in Springfield.
I thought they rekeyed up for a different size chip and we just did the plan over here.
No. What they did CDs and they worked really hard to try to get the DVD technology to be at this plant down at Terre Haute, Indiana plant. But literally, people just quit buying CDs. If you go to a music store, the CD displays out there are sort of classic rocker stuff, because we're still people who will buy a CD and not necessarily download it. But they went from a huge volume of CDs. 5 years later, they just couldn't support that structure there, so they went out. It wasn't a chip change or anything. It was a consumer change. So, and those things are going to happen. So it's fascinating, and trying to catch that future trend could be very dangerous too.
Yeah, we used to have blacksmith shops on Main Street.
Oh, I remember those.
I went to the workshop the other night, and an online toy store owner brought up something, and it's totally true that the one thing you were talking about is, you know, shifting and changing with trends, is he said the big thing that we have going for us in Springfield is our humility, our ability to stand back and just kind of go with the flow when we need to and not buck the system and say, no, we're digging in our heels, this is the way it's going to be, it won't change, and just go downhill from there.
That is an asset. Politically, we don't struggle for 20 or 30 years to come to simple directional moves. We need to capture that somehow. That's not a bad point.
Yeah, it's
so if all of a sudden,
but there is a political cycle. If
trends start dictating, you're headed this way. Now we got to head this way. It might be something that's pretty doable in the spring, but that's not a bad point. We only have about 5 minutes left, and I've already 10 minutes over, giving it back to David. For whatever we need to do to wrap up to get out of here right at 8 o'clock. I turn it over. Good discussion.
Great, thanks. We have a few minutes left, and I think we'd like to go over next steps. And we have in June we have two meetings with the Planning Commission, one with the City Council.
What are the specifics on that time and place?
These are joint work sessions. So both June 9th and June 23rd, you'll see both the Planning Commission and City Council together.
The 23rd.
You're not required. It's not considered a stakeholder meeting, but if you'd like to come as the general public just to listen in, you're welcome to. And help me out, Linda. Do you remember the time for the work sessions? I believe they start at 6. What I can do is I'll email it out to you all. But in addition, those are all listed on the city website if you go to the general city council agenda meeting calendars, then you'll see those listed on there.
So they're basically going over what we've discussed here this evening? Is that what they're going over?
Some of that. Bob, too. Cover that.
Okay.
Okay.
Then will you be bringing the buildable lands inventory information to us too?
We'll go over in the next slide in a second here. We'll show the next several meetings that we're going to do. But real fast, the next stakeholder meeting we have listed here is June 26th. And again, that's the fourth Thursday of each month. Just to clarify, some of the people here tonight weren't at the first meeting. What the group decided was, generally speaking, we'd like to keep it consistent and meet once a month, the fourth Thursday of every month. That said, I know I think Bob might have a time conflict with the state. So Bob and I had talked about maybe throwing out the idea of the Thursday before that, June 19th. But how do people feel about that? Or do you want to try to do it? So I heard one person say no.
I have a conflict on the second and third Thursday.
From my perspective, it's easier to stay on the same day. Same day every month.
Yeah, that would be good.
If somebody isn't here,
we'll find something to talk about.
Alright. So I guess we'll stick with the June 26th date. Same time.
Okay.
Alright, so moving on to the next slide, please. All All right, Bob, do you want to cover this? Let's cut over there.
Yeah, the last meeting, you asked us to give you a preview of things that we would be bringing to you in future meetings. And so we didn't, I think we just began to scrape the surface of the discussion this evening. At the June meeting, we'll have some direction from our joint work sessions with council and planning commission. So we'll bring back more discussion about the EOA, and we'll presumably have the draft buildable lands inventory data at that point. At the July meeting, we will have the actual draft economic opportunity analysis report that we'll have in front of you, and probably a draft of the economic development strategy. You may or may not at that point be prepared to take action on that, make a recommendation. We'll leave that flexible. August, we're going to give you a summer recess, and ourselves a summer recess. September, we'll come back and probably begin to initiate discussions on community development concepts. How do we package this all together? What are some of the policy options that the committee wants to recommend, and what does that mean? And then by October, we think we'll be at the point where we'll be looking at potential expansion areas. And so when we say expansion areas, our standard drill on this is to take 5 to 10 times as much land as you might be able to justify and begin to analyze that for consistency with the statutory priority scheme and other issues.
One question, and I don't want to take very much more time on in June. I think this might be a question that several folks might have. The draft buildable lands inventory will be a current inventory of commercial and industrial lands available or actually being in use?
Well, available is a term that gets defined differently by the state versus how you might define it. It will be everything that is designated for commercial and industrial uses, and we will have classified that as into several flavors. It's developed or committed for this planning period. It's buildable, which is different than developable or available. So buildable means that you know, there's land out there that's unconstrained that can be used. And then we'll probably have done some redevelopment analysis, but I think that's you know, how aggressive the city wants to be on that is really a policy issue.
And it'll be an inventory that's reflective of within the service area, not necessarily within the city limits?
We'll have done the UGB at that point.
UGB, okay. All right. Yes,
just real quickly, infrastructure issues here I think we've talked about, and I think you know that really is a key about whether something actually is developable as compared to available. Are you planning on doing some kind of overlay with the capital improvements program or where infrastructure
eventually will be that, George, but you won't see it in June.
Okay.
By the time we get to the community development concepts, and you got to bring that kind of stuff into the conversation.
Thanks.
Any last questions?
Is this background reading or?
It's homework.
Yeah. Actually, thanks for bringing that up, Carrie. So these binders, you all asked to have a binder last meeting, so now you've got about the thickest binder that we can find. You're all welcome to, actually, yeah, please take that home with you. And over the last year, as we email stuff out, go ahead and start filling it up. And yes, that is just background reading. What I tried to do was give you, everybody, some basic land use planning reading so that people can kind of get a background. Some of you, you know, this is kind of old hat. Some of you, this is brand new. So please bear with me on that. But also in the back, there's a glossary of terms that is from a DLCD's Goal 9 guidebook.
What's that alphabet soup like that?
Yeah.
The what?
Oh, I'm sorry. DLCD, that's a Department of Land Conservation and Development. It's the statewide planning agency.
Great. That was a request, and thank you for putting that in.
Can I have a request, too? What's chances of getting holes in our stuff?
Yeah, I can See, I have a three-hole puncher back in the office.
Well, I'm in the future right now.
In the future, yeah.
Yeah, for your next handout.
Yeah. One last thing in your binder, there's a list of everybody here that's on the stakeholder committee. And so while right now you look around, you see people's names, this will also tell you who they're representing. So you have the tourism industry or wood products industry, et cetera. So that'll give you an idea of who's representing here.
Okay. Anything else?
I'm running a little bit late, but I don't see any others. Okay, we're adjourned till June. Thank you all. Great discussion.
Can we keep these?
I just
want
to leave it.
It's the night before.
Yeah,
so when I'm really very interested in the buildable land, maybe if we get this time.